Hello, and welcome to Red Rock Relationships, a podcast about communication. Let's unpack the relationships that we encounter in our daily lives and learn about what makes them tick. And now your host for Red Rock Relationships, Dr. James B. Stein.
What up? I'm back. It feels like it's been forever. It was actually supposed to be longer, but our last episode featuring Dr. Shabib got pushed back a week, and so instead of having a one-week gap, we had a three-week gap, I don't know. Anyway, we're back, and we are here in the latter half of the semester, in the latter half of the show, talking about red flags, for a rare occasion, I actually have a guest who's physically present with me. Dr. Robert Hall, assistant professor in the communication department. Thanks for coming back on the show.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you. And the last couple times I had you on, we talked about stuff that was like adjacent to, but not necessarily within like the wheelhouse of your research expertise. But we're going to change that up because we're going to talk about stuff that is very much, very much within your wheelhouse. Specifically, we're going to talk about boundary crossing as a red flag in close relationships. Are you ready to go?
That depends. Are you a walking red flag?
It's not for me to determine, which I think is part of the problem. Part of the very important issue that we need to tackle. The perpetrators of those behaviors don't necessarily know that they're in the wrong.
Exactly.
And one way that people don't realize that they're in the wrong is they sometimes unintentionally cross boundaries that were either explicitly or implicitly set. Now, in order to best tackle this phenomenon, we are going to take the approach of communication privacy management theory. And I think you'll be happy to hear that we don't actually need to like go over the details of the theory because we actually covered CPM last season with Dr. Laura Carrero. However, we do need to parse some of the mechanisms because we're talking about boundary crossing. So can you spend a little bit of time in the early minutes here covering the relationship between interpersonal privacy and boundaries from the perspective of CPM?
Yeah, they're interrelated. Of course. So just to give a few quick CPM definitions with this is.
Yeah, there you go. We're just going to stop everything.
Ladies and gentlemen, Seanovan the producer.
There you go.
Thank you, Seanovan the producer.
Awesome.
Okay. So, privacy. Privacy is the individual's belief that they own their private information. That is how CPM defines it. So privacy scholars, we believe in inherent ownership of our private information when we're talking about privacy. Private information, Petronio, who is our CPM theorist, borrows it from Goodstein and Reinecker, that it's the information about oneself that is intimate and disclosed under special circumstances. Mm. Okay, so private information, privacy is the belief we own that intimate information disclosed under special circumstances. And boundaries are a metaphor in CPM. And that's kind of the big thing with CPM is these boundaries, which if we think of a cell, right, going to biology, completely different discipline.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are we talking about?
Yeah. If we think of a cell, right, mm-hmm. a cell has a membrane, mm-hmm. right, and it keeps all of the things inside of the cell.
Okay.
Now, the membrane also allows things in and out, right? So private information is much the same, right? And the boundary is that cell membrane,
mm-hmm.
right, that allows things in, allows things out sometimes. Okay. It depends on if it's good, bad, whatever, those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of our cell membranes are more permeable, which means they allow more information in. Some are more impregnable, so they keep things out.
Right.
And so that's how in CPM we look at this, is that sometimes we keep our private information in and it doesn't flow out. Sometimes we receive it and it stays in when we connect with that as well.
Okay, so I'm picturing like almost like a clump, a cluster of cells, right? And some of those cells have really thick membranes that cannot be penetrated or should not be penetrated. And others are very thin and are very much more fluid. And so, you know, if we deliver super casual information to someone that like we believe we have ownership of, it's not going to be a big deal if they share that information with other people.
Absolutely.
However, if it's something very sensitive and private and we share that with another person, we might, for example, expect them to check in with us before sharing that with others.
Exactly.
It makes me think of like the classic communication piece by Afifi and, oh boy, I don't remember who. But it started with, don't tell anyone, but, and then.
Exactly.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. It's Afifi and somebody. I, my grad school self would be upset with me for not remembering. Anyway, that is a great way to help frame the relationship between privacy and boundaries. Now, a couple weeks ago, when we talked with Dr. Shabib, we chatted a lot about obsessive behaviors and, you know, of course, a consistent boundary violation or, you know, improper, inappropriate information seeking. These are obsessive behaviors, right, that involve boundary mismanagement. But for our purposes, I'm a little bit more interested in the various ways in which we might violate boundaries in less obsessive ways, in more mundane ways, and perhaps in ways that the perpetrator might not necessarily see coming. So can you maybe give us a couple of examples of such behaviors?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was thinking about obsession and private information disclosure, I, in my studies, have not come across the idea of obsession over at all. That hasn't been a theme I found. That hasn't been something my participants have reported in any of my studies. So I found it interesting to even consider this idea of obsession. So some examples of the things I've studied are mental health disclosure and chronic illness disclosure. And I haven't found obsessiveness in terms of boundary violation there, which has been kind of interesting to reflect on and think about. Why haven't I found obsessiveness there? And perhaps it's because of the type of information being shared, right? That's something that could influence the ideas of, okay, this is very private information. There's kind of cultural scripts for how to manage this. There's relational scripts for how to manage this. But in terms of like obsessiveness, even like checking in on someone, it hasn't been reported as obsessive, which has been interesting.
That is interesting. And so, okay, so if we're talking about these more mundane behaviors, what do they look like? What does a casual boundary violation look like? If, you know, like if we're friends, right, how might I, and we are, by the way, just for, to disclose.
Thank you for clarifying.
Of course. How might I violate one of your privacy boundaries without even knowing it?
Yeah. So one way that some of my participants in my studies have described this is just if we're in our group of friends and I don't have like an explicit boundary of, well, don't tell anyone in our friend group, there might be an assumption that I already have. All right. And so if I'm having, let's say, a bad mental health day, I'm dealing with a lot of depression and I were to tell you, because as we've just established, we're friends.
Sure.
And I say, I'm having a bad depressive day. Maybe you go and tell one of our colleagues, Dr. Booth, oh, Dr. Rob's not in here today because of this, but I didn't want you to do that. That might be more casual because you would have expected me to have shared that with her.
Or if I'm like texting the group and I'm like, hey, everybody, Robbie's not feeling well today. Maybe we want to like bring him a snack or like pop by and say hi, right? That's like a well-meaning behavior, right?
Absolutely. Like, it's completely well-intentioned, but perhaps undesired by the owner of the information, the original owner, because you and I become co-owners then.
Right. Yeah. And so it can be a huge violation of trust, you know, assuming that it kind of, you can put the pieces together that I have indeed violated your boundaries in that way. That's a really good example. I also think about how like in like close, like romantic relationships, how that sort of thing can happen quite frequently related to like third party connections. You know what I mean? Like you're, you know, when people say things like, oh, hey, don't tell anyone this, what do? You immediately go tell your partner, right?
Right.
Because they don't
We
count.
Want to go tell.
They don't and count.
Yeah, that's actually come up in some of my studies of these illness disclosures. It's like, oh, yeah, they probably told this person, even though I told them not to tell anyone. It's kind of assumed that they're going to go tell that person.
Yeah.
And so there's although there's an explicit rule, right? We have different types of privacy rules. One of them is explicit.
Mm-hmm.
Explicit rule of don't tell anyone. There's also this implicit rule of like, well, I know you're going to tell this person.
I know you're going to tell your partner. And that's where we get don't tell anyone, comma, not even dot, dot, dot.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, okay. That helps us put it together. Now, what we've been talking about, I mean, these are mostly well-intentioned, mundane violations. They don't necessarily carry a great weight with them when executed. However, I think that there is space to consider boundary violations as a red flag. So, what is it about crossing another person's boundary that could carry it from innocent, well-meaning expectancy violations into a straight-up red flag, like you see a person doing this, time to turn tail and run, or at the very least start questioning the nature of your relationship with this person?
Yeah, I've seen that in some of my research and others' research as well, where we are looking at basically people describing reasons why they don't reveal information to someone.
Okay.
It's because they know they're going to go tell everyone. Mm-hmm. And so it's based on that relational history and past experiences of they've told me someone else's secrets, even though I know they weren't supposed to, or they've told mine or my private information or secret information.
Right.
So it becomes at that point literally a red flag of I cannot trust that you're going to respect our boundary rules, our privacy rules that we negotiated together because I know you're going to do this. And so at that point, it does become a red flag. They'll still say, oh, yeah, they're my friend, but I just don't trust them with certain private information.
Right. Love the guy. I'd never lend him money. Right.
Exactly.
That's the catchphrase that comes to mind. Yeah. Okay. So it seems like kind of like when we were talking about way back in the beginning of the semester when we were talking about love bombing, and we were spending a lot of time unpacking it and really highlighting the intentional malicious nature of the perpetrator. That's what makes it love bombing as opposed to just like, extremely extroverted intimacy and immediacy behaviors. It seems like with boundary violations, we've got a similar phenomenon, which is when it becomes a pattern. That is when we start to throw up the red flags. Although, this to me, it's starting to seem less like a red flag and more like an orange flag. I don't know. Where do you come down on that?
I think I come down with it because CPM is a rules correct self-correcting system.
Sure.
It's supposed to be, we'll say. Because when we have boundary turbulence, which is those shaky boundaries, like someone broke a rule, whether it was intentional or not. And so we got to renegotiate it, talk about it again, have a plan going forward. And then when that's broken again, you're supposed to redo, re-go back. But what we can see is sometimes that boundary turbulence rule negotiation is, I'm just not going to share this information with you anymore.
Mm.
Right. And so that's where I think it starts to become more of that issue is when we see again and again, you're not respecting how this is supposed to be done.
Right. Right. And I also think this is something we haven't talked about, but I also think that like inquiries can do that same thing where it's like someone's over asking, right? Or you know what I really think about, and I talk with my students about this a lot. Imagine like you're on a first date and your person's perfectly nice, but they're doing that thing where they over-disclose. So you're getting trauma dumped on the first date.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens then, you've got that pressure to reciprocate, right? You've got that, you feel that obligation to share at the same level. And now we feel like a boundary has been crossed, which again, not necessarily intentional or even, ill-mannered, but ultimately enough to be considered a relational transgression and enough to potentially dissolve the relationship, especially if it's new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we talk about that type of stuff, like my theory or dark side classes, they'll say that is a red flag. Mm. Someone who's an oversharer is a red flag. And so sharing inappropriate amounts of information at different times in relationships, that's why we have different criteria for which we disclose information.
Is right.
How close are we? What's the purpose of this? What's my risk benefit here? So it's all of those things should be considered.
Right. And I think that like a theme that we've been kind of going over for the first, 15 minutes of this episode is that a lot of this, we do it without even thinking about it. You know what I mean? Maybe we are just like a little bit you know, not acquainted with the norms or the rules or the regulations. There's a cultural difference. You know, we're just very extroverted and they're introverted, so there's some sort of disagreement there. So this kind of gets into the latter part of what I wanted to do today, which was ask for advice. And it's something that I've been trying to do all season long. So I want to first take the actor's perspective. Mm-hmm. How, as potential boundary violators, so if we put ourselves in the shoes of someone who is at risk of violating boundaries, what are one or two conscious steps that we can take to ensure that we're not crossing another person's boundaries, even if we don't mean to, even if it's mm-hmm. unintentional?
Yeah, so Afifi and Stuber in 2009 offer us actually three ways we can determine if we should reveal. They specifically talk about secrets, which are a type of private information. And one is catharsis, because keeping private information, keeping secrets, especially someone else's and our own, can be emotionally taxing.
Sure.
Right? Especially if it's a pretty severe secret or piece of private information.
And this is, again, just for a plug, this is why therapy is often so important if we can afford it.
Yes.
It's good to be able to share with someone who you know it's their job, right, to keep your secret.
To be confidential.
But anyway, just a little plug there, but go ahead, continue.
Another thing that they consider is, were you asked for the information? Mm. Because if you were asked for it, it's more of the topic at hand as opposed to just blurting out information. And then the last criteria they have is that receiver's right to know. Mm. Right? So if they have a right to know this information, like it's directly about them or they're involved in it somehow, then it's more not necessarily appropriate, but at that point we tend to reveal our secrets more. Right? So doing that, thinking about those three type of things, we can reflect and say, why would I reveal this secret?
Mm.
Right. Before we get ourselves into that messiness of revealing the private information, we can take a moment and think, why would I reveal this? Am I feeling emotional burden? Did this person ask me about it? And do they have a right to know it?
And I think on the flip of that, I think it's really important too, if we're going to request that information and we run the risk of violating that sort of norm in terms of boundaries, we can ask ourselves the obverse. We can say, okay, do I deserve to know information about this, right?
Yes.
Et cetera, et cetera. I think that that's really important, right? We can stop and think and be like, okay, do I deserve to know this information? What do I risk by asking this person, right? Am I risking the relationship, or am I just making things awkward for a brief moment? And you know, is it relevant? Like, so I think those are really conscious steps that we can take. And so that's much appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes me think about how we as people who are simultaneously encoding and decoding messages, it makes me think about the importance of being what we call an actor observer, right? Doing the thing, right? In this case, communicating with the person and also watching yourself do it, right? Engaging in that sort of self-monitoring, which is objectively very difficult to do.
Right, absolutely.
It is very hard to have a conversation and also step back and watch yourself have that conversation. But it's a skill. It's a muscle like any muscle. It can be trained. And we can learn about how certain people in our lives want to or don't want to engage. And, you know, it's difficult, but I think, you know, in terms of being a good friend or a good partner or a good family member, it's something that we can really strive to. And it's a series of concrete steps that can be taken to help better ourselves and our relationships.
Absolutely. It's just a way to improve our interpersonal communication as well as bolstering that communication efficacy.
Yeah.
Our own ability to communicate effectively across different relationships.
Okay, I got one more question. It's our bonus question. We have time.
Yay, bonus question.
I know. So we just talked about, like, hey, what are some things we can do if we're worried about potentially violating a boundary? How can we, you know, hedge, or how can we make sure that we're not doing that? Now I want to talk about the other side. Let's say we have a friend or a partner even, or somebody close to us who we feel is either violating or is at risk of violating one of our boundaries or multiple boundaries for that matter. How might we craft a message that is designed to communicate to that person that they're crossing a boundary, but in a way that, like, doesn't threaten our face, or doesn't, and also doesn't threaten them. So how can we do that in a safe manner that doesn't really put anyone at social or relational risk?
I think some perhaps personification of the rules could help there. Is making that rule that external object of the discussion rather than the person. Hmm. So I'm saying you're breaking a rule, saying, remember this rule that we made.
Oh, you know what that makes me think of? It makes me think of the three levels of conflict, mm-hmm. right? You've got the behavior focus level, level one. You've got the relationship level, level two, and then you got the personality, level three. And you always want to avoid level three. I tell my students, it's the difference between saying, hey, would you mind doing the dishes versus I wish you would do the dishes. You're such a slob.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
So reframing it in a mm-hmm. way that shields them from ownership of the problem and positions them as, an actor adjacent to the issue. Did I get that right?
Yeah, exactly. So it puts us, instead of just them as actor, puts both of us as the actor.
Shared responsibility.
Yes, it's because this is a rule we have created. Whether it's explicit or implicit, it is a rule that's negotiated. Mm-hmm. And so in that way, it allows us to revisit that rule rather than revisit us.
Right.
In essence, we are revisiting us and revisiting our relationship and our communication, but we're doing it through the rule rather than saying, James, why do you keep breaking my rules?
Right.
It's driving me nuts.
Right. So it's meta communication in both instances, but it's the locus, right? The mm-hmm. locus of conflict is the a tangible, visible third party, the rule, as opposed to one of the participants in the relationship. And I think that is such a small way to correct your language that carries so much additional meaning with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, that's a good one. Any other thoughts or tips?
I think that's probably the biggest one, is focusing on the rule. Mm. But also just reflecting as well about our expectations for our rules. Because remember, they're co-owned, right? And so when we reveal, we are no longer the only person who owns this information, right? There are at least two people who do. And so it's a we negotiation. I might have expectations for this rule, but maybe my co-owner has different expectations. And so
right.
we have to make sure that all of those needs, wants, and desires around it are met. What we usually find is that a co-owner will tend to default to the original owner's information, their preferences, but they may not be as comfortable doing so, or they may want to know when I can share this information.
Yeah.
And so having those conversations can help as well.
Yeah. And again, I think that really reinforces that, like, we're talking about good faith actors here. Mm-hmm. It made me think of, I don't know what brought this up, but it made me think of the concept of an emotional tourist. You know what I mean? So like a person who collects the stories of other people mm-hmm. so that they can share it and seem interesting. That to me, there's your red flag, right? Someone who's going around collecting other people's stories and memories and identities and then relaying them to other folks so that they can feel smart and they can feel special and they can feel important. And odds are, if there's a person out there doing that kind of thing, they're probably also engaging in some of the other red flag behaviors that we've been talking about over the course of our time together. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, probably. It seems likely.
Well, that we've got 2 minutes left, but we covered pretty much everything that I wanted to. So what do you think? What's your diagnosis? Boundary crossing, inherently a red flag, context specific, not at all.
Context specific for sure.
Context specific.
As you know, most things are.
I'm surprised by how many of those we've landed on being context specific. Like when Clint Graves was on and we talked about gaslighting, it was the same thing. He was like, well, you know, it's not what everyone thinks it is. And so you got to be really careful. And it just always makes me think of like the classic, it depends.
Right.
Right. When people ask, especially students, when they're like, I have this going on. What do you think?
It depends.
It always depends. And that's kind of the beauty of the social sciences is that it is culturally specific, relationally specific, interpersonally specific. So yeah, I often view boundary crossing as redeemable and mm-hmm. less a red flag than something like love bombing,
right?
Or gaslighting. But at the end of the day, chronic boundary violations can be a red flag. And so, I don't know, if you see someone in your life doing this, you're going to have that conversation with them.
Absolutely. Either have that conversation with them or just know how to properly manage your private information around them.
Yes. And speaking of managing private information, next week we're going to be talking about very private relationships that, when made public, can be highly problematic in close relationships. Specifically, we're going to be talking about back burner relationships. You talk about privacy management. That's what we're getting into next. We'll have Dr. Jason Dibble there to help us. But for now, Dr. Hall, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime, and more times, I will make you come on the show. It was a wonderful talk, and I'm looking forward to our next couple of episodes. They're going to be a little bit more intense and a little bit more potentially threatening. But until then, hope everyone's end of semester is going well.
You've been listening to Red Rock Relationships, a podcast about communication. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time. If you'd like to be on the show or have questions for us, please send us an email to redrockrelationships@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Just search Red Rock Relationships. Thank you again. And remember, it all begins with good communication.